So I'm going to talk about the auto protocol and the latest updates we did based on the reviews by the AD. I'm Reynaldo, the second guy there. All right, go ahead. Okay, talk about the changes after the working group last call and outstanding issues that you guys might have an opinion about. Next slide. Okay, so we got quite a few of comments from Martin. We did many editorial changes and clarifications regarding that. So this is a list of the most, I would say, interesting changes. So there is a new section called 11, called manageability considerations, that we talk about how to actually deploy Auto. You have to configure a TTP server. You have to have interface to routing systems, some other management systems. Anyway, it goes into some amount of detail on that front. We define a new version tag match, because version tag goes back to the beginnings of the protocol, but we haven't really defined how you compare version tags, so we added that text. We changed support for SSL TLS from may to must. The cost type identifier, so there are two, I would say, keywords, priv and asp, for private and experimental, but that wasn't alone to make them unique cost types, so we added wording such that you need to have another keyword after those, such as the company name or some other unique identifier, right? Input parameters constraints. So now in the endpoint property service, endpoint cost service, you can pass constraints such as greater than, less than, or equal to, much like the cost map. And we removed the optional of a map VTag from endpoint property, as Vijay put it. Next slide. So what are things that are going to be fixed? So add an Auto error code registry. So there is a registry on the back of the draft for cost types and media types. But there's none for error codes, so we're going to add that. Specify services and parameters that are mandatory to be implemented by an Auto server. So if you need to implement an endpoint property, endpoint cost, map filtering service, etc. So we actually had that a long time ago. Somehow it got removed, but we're going to add it back. Next slide. So there is some discussion about what to do with non-conforming servers and non-conforming clients, and whether that discussion should be on the protocol document or maybe on a implementer's document, as Vijay alluded to. For example, let's suppose you have a non-conforming server that the HTTP response is 200 OK. But the also response indicates an error, right? So what do you do? Do you start over? Do you log an error? Or do you basically overlook that and continue processing? So there are quite a few cases about that. This is just two examples. So the discussion for the working group is whether we document some of those use cases in another document, or we add some normative language, a small paragraph saying this is what you should do for non-conforming server or clients in general. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Vijay Karbani. So I think the two examples you have there are probably, in my view, you know, put in the protocol document itself.
Okay.
Because they deal with auto response codes, etc. Mm-hmm. In my view, the stuff that needs to go in outside would be, you know, using tools such as Netcat, for instance, which are not Auto clients, and maybe providing some other ideas on, you know, so stuff along that. But I think these particular two examples ought to probably go in the protocol document.
Okay, sounds good.
Ben Evan Jenkins. Yeah, on the second example, I think I'd have to check 2616 to be sure, but I think it's valid for a server to return a different content type than was in the accept headers. So it'd be perfectly valid to return an alter error, even if the GET request didn't include that in its accept headers.
Okay, if you can send that feedback to the list, that'd be good.
Martin, Stimmelink speaking. So that would be good if we can document it in the alter protocol that this would be behavior. Because I stumbled across this, like, what the hell is happening if this is the case?
Okay, so I guess we can put those on the protocol document. The second main bullet point here, specify behaviors of the generated map filtering service. In a nutshell, is so the map filtering service, you can pass a certain set of filters, such as as we said, greater than, less than, or some other types of filters. So and the PID address types, so you don't get the entire cost map. So what do you do then, if you pass an empty filter, right? If you pass an empty filter, does that mean that is the same as no filter and you get everything back, or it means that you don't want anything back? It's just some kind of a test case, right? So that wasn't specified in the. It's not specified in the protocol today. Go ahead.
Yeah. Martin Stimmelink, it's maybe it's even specified that you get a complete map back, but my question out of the AD review was that is this the intended behavior, or was it just like an oversight in the protocol design, and there I wanted to get some feedback from the working group on this, how the working group sees this. And I think both cases are technically okay.
Yep.
It's only if my point would be if you allow to give an empty query to the server and it returns the full map, then this should be documented somewhere in the manageability section saying, be aware, if you don't put any filter, you get back a full map.
Right. Yeah, just to answer a question, with our interpretation at the time is no filter equals, empty filter means no filter. You get everything. But it could go either way. So if the working group is okay, we can leave it the way it is. Next slide. Endpoint property. So there is a method for endpoint property where you can query, for example, if an endpoint is connected to say a 3G or a Wi-Fi, or what's the PID for that endpoint. So today, it goes back to the registry. Remember talking the first slides about the error registry. So the question is if we need a registry of endpoint properties. For example, connection type, speed, right, or other things, right? Or we just leave today as opaque key values, right? So today, the way it is today, there's no registry, right? It's up to the implementations to have be able to compare those and make use of those key values, right? So if no change is needed, we can leave the way it is.
Maybe so. It's only me on the mic today, Martin Stimmelink. So this, if you have something like the endpoint property, which is not defined at all, which it looks usually quite easy to say, well, everybody does it what he likes to do with that one.
Mm-hmm.
But I know from some other protocols that those freeform fields caused headaches later on because implementations were doing really weird things.
Right.
And that's something where probably the working group should go back a bit and think, okay, what type of format or whatever we expect there should happen. There's no need to define it to the very end, meaning everything, but it should be give at least some guidance how they should be looking like. So.
Yeah, so there is a precedence. We have, not precedence for it, but we have a cost type registry. We have all those types registries. We're going to insert the error registry. The question is if we want to add we're already adding registers for everything, so as you put it, you might as well, to facilitate interoperation, put a registry for that.
Maybe because you're talking all the time, which is good, but it would be good if there's some feedback from the working group here, or maybe if not here, then on the list. No feedback. Okay, go on.
Okay. So there was a suggestion to unify cost mode and cost type. So in other words, instead of having those two parameters, you have just one. So that makes it simpler. So you can get rid of say ordinal or numeric as another set of parameters. So the protocol today has those two independent, cost mode and cost type. So the proposal was to have, say, routing cost num as numerical and routing cost ord as ordinal, right? So if you have any opinion, you can put in the mailing list or here. Next slide. Yeah, that's it. And I think I've been through all the discussion points. Go ahead.
Just Benjamin Jenkins, just one question. I think on maybe your second slide where you had the list of changes.
Right.
You said that you changed SSL to being a must.
Correct.
But in the current draft on the repository, it's still a may.
Yeah, it will be changed to must.
Okay.
Be changed to must.
And this time it's the 80, which is still checking the updated version when we're discussing this. So it's like blame it to the 80. I forgot what I wanted to say. Ah, right. So it would be good if some of the authors could post those things on a list so people see it, because I don't think that the room has the energy to discuss it here. So
okay.
It's maybe for all in this room here, wake up, it's important that we discuss those things and get those fixed, because otherwise the protocol cannot just go forward.
So there is, okay, there is another thing that we discussed that's not here. It's about the V tag, the version tag. So today the version tag, there's no specification of its format, right? Let's suppose somebody argues it's a hash function. So the question is, how can the client and server agree to use the same hash function so that things can be, I'd say, compared or two servers? Or if the V tag, there should be some default behavior for the version tag so that if in the default behavior for interoperability purposes, it's a monotonically increasing number. So it's clear that if the server gives you a V tag of 3 for the maps and you have a V tag of 1, the server has a newer version. If it's just a string, you can compare, but you suffer somehow from debuggability, right? Because it's just a big string, right? So if it's a monotonically increasing, you can do all kinds of debugs and statistics, how many the rate of change and other things. If it changes from this hash from this other hash, it can still work, but it's more limited. All right, I think that's about it.